appear before Congress.
Good morning. Happy Saturday morning to you out there. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you are. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
I mean, it's like May. Who's not having a fabulous Saturday in May? I mean, Saturdays in May just give you a taste of the summer that is yet to come. Warm weather, freedom, generally no school and work. People are they're out in their yard today. We're playing on, like, pool speakers right now. There is, like, I mean, people are exercising. It's beautiful. It's a Saturday May. There's nothing like it on the earth.
Well, just there you go. Bang. I mean,
happy Saturday.
If you're not having a good Saturday, I mean, and no shame
be.
To you, but you should be. According
you
to Beth,
should be.
You should be. And today is not just any normal Saturday.
It isn't.
In the Guckenberger household. It is your daughter's birthday.
It is. I mean, 15 years ago today, I was the most naive first-time parent. No, like, how to expect when you're expecting. I was giving birth in a foreign country, having not taken any birth classes, and I didn't speak the language. So I was just like, here's to hoping the body knows what to do, because I don't.
So I didn't know the I didn't speak Spanish yet part. So,
oh.
Like, when you went to the hospital, I'm assuming you went to the hospital.
Oh, yes. So they said to me at one point that the labor wasn't progressing as fast as they wanted it to. So this lady came in and she spoke this whole long sentence. And at the end of it, she used this word oxitocino, which I now know is Spanish for oxytocin, a drug they use to induce labor. But all I heard when she's like, ahora nos vamos a llevar oxitocino, I heard the word tocino, which is one of the few words I had learned so far. It means bacon. So I looked at my husband and I said, honey, I think there must be like a Mexican thing. I don't know. They're going to bring me some bacon. So like 2 hours later, you know, like I've got IVs hooked up.
I'm
like,
bacon.
So I like just kind of quietly say something about bacon, tocino. And she's like, oh no, honey, you can't eat today. There's no eating. And I was like, I thought you told me I was going to get some bacon. So yeah, I was beyond clueless 15 years ago in every sense of the word.
Yeah, not only did you not know they were hurrying up your labor, but
nope.
You're not supposed to eat, and you certainly weren't getting bacon.
No, they were like, this is not the kitchen, honey. You're in a
hospital.
I
would have to agree with most people that bacon is good anytime for any reason, but in the midst of labor about to give birth, I don't think bacon would have been a good thing.
I mean, I would have eaten the pig itself if I would have thought it would have made that baby come out. I was just like, whatever old wives' tale you got going on, bring it on. Bring it on.
Yeah. Well, 15 years after that momentous occasion where you thought you were getting bacon,
yeah.
You're in Mexico, right? You're still there. So 15 in Mexico is quite a thing.
It's
like in the States, we have sweet 16 parties sometimes.
Yes,
won't be having one at my house, but some people have them. Is this sort of the same thing except you're 15? What's the deal?
Actually, it's about 12 times larger than any sweet 16 party I have ever heard of. A quinceañera functions like a wedding. So you have like a ceremony.
Okay, so what does quinceañera mean?
I mean, it means your 15th blowout party that involves lots of people. I mean, I haven't almost ever heard of a quinceañera party with less than 300 people. It involves a church, and your dad walks you down the aisle, and you have different members that are important to you and your extended family that stand up at different points in the ceremony and make you commitments about how they're going to watch and walk with you into adulthood. And then everybody goes to a dinner reception that involves live bands and sit-down meals and dance floors, and I mean, these things are enormous. But one interesting thing I've been talking to some of Emma's friends about lately is that, I mean, I don't know the history of quinceañeras, how many hundreds of years it's been going on, but it has been going on forever, and it's at every socioeconomic level. I mean, of course, the wealthier folks in the Latin American communities have more elaborate parties.
Yeah.
But even folks in the lower economic classes, they'll be going without meat for 2 years in order to save money for the quinceañera, because they want, in that mentality, they want the girls to look back in their childhood and remember the big event, not remember the 365 days they had beans and rice. So you'll see, you know, families that don't have electricity spending $300 on a quinceañera dress and $100 on photographs at a fancy studio because they want that picture hanging in their house. It's actually kind of fascinating. But to Emma's little friends, they've been telling me how it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure to compare because all the girls in the ninth grade are having their quinceañeras this year. So it's
like you said, it's like a wedding.
Yeah, so it's like all of your friends are having a wedding in the exact same year, and you have to put on a party that was as cool or cooler than your friends. And my Emma has one that's coming up in 2 weeks where she is like a bridesmaid, but they're not called bridesmaids. They're called damas. And so we had to buy like a dress.
What do they call?
Like a dama.
D-O-M-A-S?
D-A-M-A-S. Okay. So we had to buy Emma like a bridesmaid's dama dress and shoes. And she's been practicing with these other damas and then what function like the groomsmen, but they're called chambelans. But in these choreographed dances, and this is all just for one little girl who's turned 15 in a few weeks.
Oh, my God.
I'm just like, sorry if I'm sounding a little frothy at the mouth, but it has been, I cannot wait till these people turn 16 here.
I got to tell you, I have a theme idea, if you haven't, you probably already have a theme, but I think something that would be particularly special at your quinceañera is a bacon theme.
And confess to everyone.
You can have like scallops wrapped in bacon. You can just have bacon itself. You could expand it to pork if you wanted. But I think it would tie in nicely to the whole birth story thing. I mean, that would be something that no other quinceañera would ever have.
No,
Emma would love that.
Oh, man. I mean, Todd's favorite story about her birth was in Mexico 15 years ago, babies didn't room in the rooms. So you had your baby, and then it stayed in a nursery down the hall where you couldn't see it again till you were discharged. Yeah. But I was like, where the heck is my kid? And get it here to me now and watch this woman get on fire in whatever language you'd like her to get into so that that baby comes into this room. And I'm sure they are still talking about my mess
another way that you've changed the culture of Mexico forever. Some American woman 15 years ago demanded that her baby be in the same room. And
they were all
every
sure,
baby's in the same room.
I mean, they were sure Emma was going to die of exposure. And I was like, someone's going to die today, but it is not that baby, so get her in. I mean, I was a woman on fire.
Now, a cool thing, now, I have to say, is this is not your first quinceañera.
Oh, heavens no.
Even though it's your first daughter, you guys have had a lot of opportunities to have quinceañeras for the orphans that you serve.
Yeah, we have five adopted and foster daughters that are older than Emma, so I've done this five other times previously with every one of them. And then we have, hundreds of orphans that we have done quinceañera parties for, which it's just a very memorable time for them. Many of them give up the dream they'd ever have anything like that when they are dropped off in an orphanage. And so for us to put on an event where they feel beautiful and valued and paid attention to, and I'm always telling them, your life is being eyewitnessed, and it's our pleasure to do so, so. Those are meaningful.
Well, I had to jump out of the show. I mean, it's not every day that you have a quinceañera and your daughter turns 15 in Mexico and all that kind of stuff. But I also want to let people know we have got an incredibly interesting show today. Jen Hatmaker is going to be with us right after the break. She's written a new book called Seven, An Experimental Mutiny Against Excess. And she involved her husband and her five children in this unbelievable 7-month experiment about giving stuff away and basically fasting, changing everything about food, clothes, spending, media, possessions, waste, and stress. Man, and just reading a little bit of the book, it's going to be incredibly interesting. She's going to join us right after the break.
I can't wait. I actually, the minute I heard about that book, I knew I not only wanted it, I wanted to do it with one of my really good friends, and I wanted to have her on the radio. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And then joining us after the break will be Craig Jundin, who is he's the executive producer of the acclaimed documentary Stuck. And if you haven't seen the documentary, I have. It really is quite powerful. And so again, I don't know who's booking our guest. Jenna Gieses is, again, a shout-out to Jenna, the amazing booker of guests. She is doing a great job of finding these incredibly interesting people.
I think Stuck will be very interesting. As someone, I just helped a family complete an international adoption, which is the subject of the Stuck documentary, international adoption, and its recent decline in the last several years. I think it'll just be interesting. So stay tuned, listeners.
You do not want to go away. And maybe we'll even talk about bacon. I don't even know. Maybe we'll save that for at the end. You never know. Well, we hope you're having a great Saturday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Ironically, I'm Rob, that's Beth, and we're part of the show, and hopefully you will be too in just a minute. See you then.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Having a fantastic Saturday morning wherever you happen to be, and I got to admit, Beth, I'm now just thinking about bacon.
Stop it! Of all my bacon stories, you're gonna remember
that's,
that.
That's one of your best stories. That is one of your best stories. Thinking that they were bringing you bacon when you were delivering—that's just hilarious. Okay, on to bigger and better things. Jen Hatmaker is with us, and Jen and her husband Brandon—they live in Austin, Texas. They lead Austin New Church. And they raise a bunch of kids, actually five of them. And they pioneered something called Restore Austin, connecting churches to local and global nonprofits for the spiritual and social renewal of Austin and beyond. Jen's written a ton of books, I think 9 of them or something like that. She speaks at events all around the country. And we're having her on today to talk about what I think is going to be just a really cool thing. And it's in her book called Seven, An Experimental Mutiny Against Excess. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. So, Jen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about where the idea came for Seven, and for any of our listeners who aren't familiar yet with it, what does it deal with? What's the subject matter?
Sure. So, we sort of had this nagging feeling for some time that it sort of revolved around our luxuries and our extravagances and our indulgences, maybe the way that we are spending money. My husband and I have been in full-time ministry for just all of our adult lives. So we've always been very connected to the church, but just had this sneaking suspicion that something was off when it came to sort of our own personal consumerism, but didn't quite know how to nail that down, didn't quite know how to deal with it. And so, honestly, it was sort of catalyzed for us, Seven, and I'll tell you kind of what that means in just a second. But a couple of years ago, we had a big Hurricane Ike hit the coast down here in Texas, and our little church plant was brand new at the time. It was only like maybe 4 months old or 5 months old. We just sort of said, what can we do here? How can we help? Who can we help that will have no one else to help them? Who doesn't have a savings account to go live in a hotel for a month while this all gets sorted out? So we made some phone calls and got connected with a really lovely group of believers down on the coast, but they were, most of them spoke Spanish, almost none of them spoke English, and they had very, very little. And so we said, why don't you guys come up to Austin? We'll help you get here, and our little church group will just take you in. So I don't know, there was maybe 15 homes that we just sort of opened up and said, we can take 8, we can take 10, just what, however it worked out. And so we had a group of about 10 staying with us. And so they're driving in, and I'm nervous. I've moved the kids all into my bedroom. We've gotten the house all ready for everybody. And and they're walking in the door, and they had a son, one of the boys, was probably 8 or 9 or so. And he walks in my house and starts looking around. His eyes are all huge. And he goes, Dad, this white dude is rich. And we're like, oh, my gosh. What in the world? Because, of course, the first thing I wanted to do was deny that. No, we're not rich, kid. We're middle. You know, we're in the middle. But you know what? Honestly, it just stuck with me, because the thing is, when you start spending time with folks below your rung, you start to see your stuff with fresh eyes. And we just started realizing that not only did we have everything, we had too much. And We were past the point of gratefulness, past the point of responsibility. So anyway, from that, Seven was born, this crazy little experiment that our family did for the better part of a year.
And now, so now, how did you choose? How did you choose seven things?
Yeah. So we sat down and said, okay, what seven areas are we overindulged? Specifically, our family, but probably at, on a larger scale, our culture. And we nailed down seven areas where we just thought it was too excessive. So we had food, clothes, possessions, media and technology, waste, spending, and stress. And in every one of those, we were like, "This is these things own us. We don't own them." And so we spent 1 month on each area, and we boiled it down to just seven choices. Like, for example, the first month was food, and we ate the same seven foods for a month. The next month was clothes, and we wore the same seven pieces of clothes for the entire month. I mean, you have to understand, I'm the girl who stood in my closet and said I had nothing to wear, and I had almost 350 items of clothes in my closet on just my side. So out of control. So on and on and on. We only spent money in seven places. We decided to give away seven things a day that we owned. And it went like that. And so that really took up the better part of a year for us. It was really radical and transformative, and honestly, we'll never be the same.
And your kids, I know, we both have questions. You go, okay, go first, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw those seven things, the first thing was, those are the seven things. I mean,
yeah.
Who can argue with those seven things? The second thing I thought of immediately was, I saw how old your kids were, 14, 12, 10, 9, 7.
Yeah.
How in the world did you convince your five children that this was a good idea?
That's a good question. First of all, at the time I only had three. Our youngest two children are adopted from Ethiopia, and we just brought them home a year and a half ago. So they weren't home with us yet. This was,
okay, just the two.
In the storyline, and so it was just three. And we exempted our kids from the first 2 months. So they did not do food or clothes with my husband Brandon and I. Because just honestly, that's just too crazy. I mean, I'm just not going to answer to their therapist one day for why I made them wear the same outfit every day for a month of fourth grade. So they did all the rest of the months with us. Because honestly, you know, like for media and technology, for example, we shut down seven forms of input. So we had no TV, no gaming, no texting, no internet. You know, they had to do that with us. You know, we're not going to be locked away in our closet while they're like downstairs on Facebook. So, honestly, it was wonderful for our kids. Now, if they were here, they may say something different. But it was good for all of us. And interestingly enough, on the month where we tackled possessions and we decided to give away seven things a day that we owned, we told our kids, you guys are in on this. You have stuff. You have too much, too, and you have stuff to share, but we're going to let you be in charge of it. You can decide. We're not going to decide for you. And it was really cool because they ended up being far more generous with their things than we would have been with their things. And so at the end of it, we really, really sat down as a family, and we've made some permanent changes because of it, for sure. So it deeply affected us all, and sometimes they were hostile, so, you know, whatever. It was a 50-50.
And which months were the hardest for you? Like, which months were you kind of dreading knowing they were coming up?
You know what's funny? Well, I'll tell you what I was dreading the most, which I thought was going to be the hardest month, was clothes. I just thought, how am I going to wear the same seven pieces of clothes?
And I mean, you're in Texas. Those girls dress good in Texas. I've been there before.
That's so true. Although we live in hippie Austin.
Okay.
So of all the places where I could get a pass on clothes, it is here.
Okay.
But I travel and speak a lot, and I still wasn't going to hedge. So I had to pick seven pieces of clothes that could work for my day, like mom at home life, and then my weekend travel life. And so I thought, this is going to be terrible. This is going to be, and you know what? It was by far the easiest month. So nobody cares. Nobody noticed what I was wearing. Nobody said anything. No one is thinking about me as much as I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was actually wonderful. That was the easiest month. The hardest month was spending. I just underestimated how casually we spend money. And so we had agreed we can only spend money in seven places, which, I mean, that is the bare bones. That basically kept food on the table and electricity on. And so, you know, there's no restaurants, no entertainment, no coffee, no anything at all. And I really felt the pinch. It was kind of embarrassing how hard that month was for me.
Hmm. How would you? I mean, I'm intrigued by the idea, obviously, and I'm going to go home and try to convince my family to join in.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How would you sort of maybe coach me or somebody else who might be intrigued in doing it? How would you coach them to sort of begin this process and prepare themselves?
I love that you're asking that, first of all. Let me tell you right up front, when I dreamed up seven and then wrote it throughout the experiment, I never in a million years thought anybody else would want to do it. That didn't even occur to me. And so it's been hilarious to see literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people doing seven across the country and really around the world. I didn't write it to be instructive. So as you read it, there's no tips, there's no hints. I just couldn't believe anybody would be crazy like I was. So the first thing I want to tell you is that as you read seven, it is not a prescription. You know, it's not a template. This isn't the perfect way or the only way. I actually think that when it comes to battling excess and consumerism, there's a lot of means to a similar end. And so what I love, consequently, I ended up writing curriculum based off of it called the Seven Experiment for people who wanted to try it at home. And in the Seven Experiment, I've allowed for tons of different options and versions and all that. And so what I would say is read it and just sit with it for a little bit because you may not want to follow the exact same path. I've had lots of really cool responses back from Seven who said, you know, we really wanted to tackle food, but we did it this way. You know, we just said, okay, for the month, we are going to eat what we have. You know, we're not going to buy anything else except for milk maybe. I think there's a lot of different pathways in here that are going to kind of lead us to some similar conclusions. And so my advice to you is talk with your family, and this is something we talked about a lot. You know, you can't drag your people into something of this scope. And so we talked a lot, what would this look like for us? What do we think is going to be hard? And so we brought our kids along in the discussion as well. And then again, I would also say we did it a month at a time, which is a long time. Lots of people have found just some really cool movement within seven, doing it a week at a time or 2 weeks at a time. And so again, no template. Have a lot of freedom in it. I actually don't think the details are where the magic is. I think what God's going after here is our heart, and how we get there can look a thousand different ways.
Mm-hmm. And what permanent changes stayed with you all after you did those? Do you feel like your life looks different today than it did before you did the experiment?
Yes. First of all, virtually most of the things that we tackled in the month on waste have stuck. I want you to know that I was the most heinous kind of consumer, conserving nothing, recycling nothing, absolutely clueless and irresponsible in every way. And so those have all still stuck. We are much more careful about our consumption. We garden and we compost still and all these crazy things. We still are super careful with our gas consumption and our spending looks really different. I mean, that really threw the brakes on for us. I averaged a year's worth of bank statements leading up to seven just to find out how many places, how many different vendors do we spend money with per month on average. And we were averaging 66 vendors a month. So that's not even counting repeat expenditures. We were spending money in 66 different places a month. And so that's just crazy sauce, you know? Getting it down on paper and just naming it and owning it and saying this is really where we're at, we're kind of out of control, really just changed us. It made us really think differently. And so during Possessions, we got rid of so much stuff, and honestly, we haven't hardly replaced any of it. And so it really did. What I can tell you is it's not so much that all the detailed stuff, because Seven was really done in the spirit of a fast, that we are going to temporarily fast from all these indulgences, just try to create some space for the spirit to move. So it wasn't that the details stuck so much as it changed our thinking. It changed the questions that we asked. And in that way, I don't think we'll ever go back.
Well, Jen, can you join us right after the break? I just had one more question, and I'd love for people to know how to get the book. Can you join us?
No problem.
Great. Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and what a great conversation we're having with Jen Habmaker, the author of Seven, an Experimental Mutiny Against Excess, and we will see you right after the break.
have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Beth and Rob, hope you're having a fabulous, fabulous Saturday morning, wherever you happen to be. I'm loving this conversation with Jen Hatmaker about her book 7, An Experimental Mutiny Against Excess. And Jen, welcome back. We are just, I know I'm having a great time. I think Beth's having a great time. This is a great conversation.
Thank you. I wish we had more time because there's so much to hash out together. I have honestly found the beauty of this conversation is in the discussion.
Yeah,
I just
absolutely.
Like talking about it. I like pulling and pushing against one another and adding their ideas into the pot and just raising it to attention to me is half the battle.
Yeah, I
was saying that to Rob in the break. I said, man, if we were having coffee right now, I got a whole bunch of questions. I got questions about, like, because you could imagine that all of the buttons that it would push. Like, I was thinking, Rob's all like, I'm going to do this. Let's give away 7 things a day until someone went after his bookshelf. And then he'd be like, get away from my bookshelf. And you'd really begin to see, you know, what is important to people and what we hold on to tightly to. For you is like, I fast on a pretty regular basis, not because I in any way enjoy it, but because I know I need that self-discipline in my own life.
Yeah.
So one of the things I struggle with when I fast is I don't hold myself to a high enough standard. I think I'm fasting, I know I'm fasting, but like, dang, I got people over for dinner. I'm just going to do a little bit right now. You know, I don't want them to feel weird, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so were there any times when you all felt like being gray or when one of you was like, maybe this isn't a good day for this, and the other one had to hold
you
accountable?
If by were there any days, you mean were there 100 days like that?
Yeah.
The answer is yes. So totally. I mean, we're talking about 7 months here, and it was just practicing restraint for that amount of time. I mean, it was really emotionally taxing. We're just not a restrained culture. We are certainly not a restrained family. So just constantly holding our appetites in check was really, really a discipline that needed flexing in our life. And so it was so hard. And I said at the beginning at 7, and by the way, it's written like really funny. So I know this is like serious, a very serious conversation. And it is in the book too, but honestly, there was so much humor in it too because this is just too crazy not to include all the cards. But I said at the beginning, you guys, I am a cheater. So I just want you to know up front, that is the way I hedge. And because of that, I instituted a council. So they're called the council. It was 6 of my best friends. Mm-hmm. And they were my think tank, and they were my people throughout the whole project. And they did it with me in various shades. And so the council kept the wheels on. And so all the times when I was trying, I was thinking, right this moment, I'm going to drink coffee. I'm just doing it. I'm doing it because I want to. Mm-hmm. I would send a text out to the council, and they're, like, putting the brakes on for me and helping me. And then a couple of times I cheated. I don't even want to tell you this, but I'm going to. on the giveaway month where we gave away 7 things a day, well, a couple of months in advance, I had the details of 7 worked out. So I knew what it was going to look like. And I thought, I don't know if we have 7 things a day to give. I mean, I don't know if what that's going to look like by the end of the month. Are we going to be sitting on the floor where our couches used to be? Mm-hmm. And so a couple of months in advance, I was cleaning out my kids' closet, not like in a noble way, just in a way the seasons were changing and none of these fit. So it wasn't anything altruistic.
Right.
And I had this huge stack of clothes. And I thought, I think I might just hang on to this stack just in case I need it for the giveaway month. So in other words, I pre-hoarded, and I'm sorry. But I didn't use it. I didn't even need to use it, you guys. We gave away over 1,000 things that month. Again, I underestimated how much we have amassed. So anyway, yes, I feel you on the – it's very taxing to restrain our appetites. It so is.
Yes. Well, Jen, I wanted to make sure that we had a chance for our listeners to know how to get a hold of the book. I know that you got a website as well where they can check out your schedule and perhaps schedule a time for you to come speak to their organization. Where can they find all that information?
Sure. You can get 7 anywhere. I mean, 7's in Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's in all your Christian bookstores. So you can get anywhere you want. And then my blog, which is just my name, jenhatmaker.com, or my website, sorry. That's where my travel schedule is, and I'm all over the place. And so I may be coming near you. And I blog there as well. And there's more information on the other books that I've written and all that good stuff. So jenhatmaker.com.
Jen, thanks so much for being here. Just some really inspiring, great stuff about how all of us can perhaps have this mutiny against excess ourselves.
Love it. Thanks for having me, you guys. Enjoyed my time with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for being there. I am part of what we want to do is inspire conversations in our listeners for the rest of the day. And I think they have so much to talk about in the rest of their day today as a result of what you shared. So thanks. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. All right. So, you know, just, you know, what we've been doing this month and the end of April, beginning of May, has been trying to give people some things to sort of spur on conversations, some things to consume, really. Books, movies, whatever, that might allow them to ease into the summer months or the weekends with something meaningful to talk about, something interesting to talk about. Certainly Jen and her book, 7, An Experimental Mutiny Against Excess, is one of those things. But a really powerful possibility is involved with our next guest, Craig Jundin, who is the executive producer of an acclaimed documentary called Stuck. He's also the founder, president of an organization called Both Ends Burning Campaign, a child welfare advocate. He's a passionate believer in international adoption. And this acclaimed documentary, something that you could probably pull up on Netflix or something, or pay to see, or we'll find out from Craig. I've seen the trailer. It is powerful, and it is about the children and the families and the countries and everything that's involved in international adoption. So, Craig, we are excited to have you on the show. How are you this Saturday?
I am great. Thank you for having me. It's a real privilege to be on your show.
Yeah, we are glad to have you.
You know what, Craig, I was just this last weekend with the Christian Alliance for Orphans president, Jed Metafine, and we were talking a little bit about your film because I was telling him you were going to be on the show coming up. And just this the big picture problem that the film shines a spotlight on, the slowdown and the struggles that are going on with international adoption. For our listeners who don't have a finger on the pulse of that, would you kind of paint the big picture of what Stuck covers and what was your inspiration to bring this to light?
Of course. Well, at the heart of this matter is, relative to facilitating at-risk children to join a family, what we are doing today just really isn't working. And by the way, my opinion is validated by statistical measurement. International adoption has fallen every year for 8 straight years. Despite the fact that there are millions of children who need a family and deserve a family, and there are countless families that want to adopt those children but can't. And so what has happened is a dysfunctional and broken system is denying children their basic human right, which is a right to a family. And it's really a silent social tragedy. One of the inspirations for this film was that we learned that 8 out of 10 Americans believe international adoption is on the rise, when, in fact, as I've said, it's in freefall decline. Mm-hmm. And so while the practices is in freefall, the number of children in institutions continues to grow, the number of families that want to adopt continue to grow, and that's how we got the name Both Ends Burning for the campaign, because both ends of the adoption spectrum are unfulfilled. So Both Ends Burning just decided it was time for a national discussion about how to change this unnecessary situation. And so we made Stuck to expose a silent social tragedy. And, we are now out on a tour to form the social and political will to deal with this issue. And the outcome we're looking for is that in the years ahead, more children will have a family through the process of adoption, because the film shares a lot of new information, and that new information is being a catalyst to create this conversation about the importance of a family to a child. And our hope is that, like other social movements that have preceded us, if common sense meets with this new information, change will begin to happen.
I'm an internationally adoptive parent, and certainly when we went through the process, I don't know a single family, well, there probably are some, but I felt stuck in the process. It was an incredible challenge. And, with a beautiful outcome, and I've forgotten all about that season, but would you explain, are adoptive parents like myself rallying behind you, or where is most of your support coming from?
Well, the support is coming from just about everywhere, and it's because this idea of a child having a right to belong in a family, as opposed to the other alternative, which is growing up and spending their formative years in an orphanage or on the streets. It's such a fundamental value and core of any successful society that everybody is embracing this issue. What's interesting is most people don't know about this. So the reaction to the film is, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And then the second reaction we're getting is, well, then how can I help? If you look at this, I'm 58 years of age. I was a businessman prior to getting involved in this. We adopted 3 children in 2006 from Haiti.
We need to talk about that after the break. I'd love to hear the story, and we're going to do that. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back right after this break.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
With Beth and Rob, and we are talking with Craig Jungman, who is the founder, president, all-around bigwig of Both Ends Burning Campaign, a child welfare advocate, a passionate believer, and of international adoption. And he's the executive producer of the documentary Stuck. And right before the break, and Craig, I apologize, we're coming up against a hard break, and I interrupted you. But you were talking about your adoption of three children from Haiti.
Well, that's where this started, and our three children came home in 2006, and the key learning for me in the early years of our children being at home was, one, kids are kids, whether they're born in Houston or Haiti, and then, two, I began to really get a good, solid understanding that this system of international adoption is highly, highly inefficient, and in many cases, it's just simply dysfunctional. And I went out on a three-year exploration to really try to understand why this has happened. Why is a system so stubborn and so inefficient that is actually damaging and destroying kids? It just defied common sense. And, we worked with a couple of consulting firms. I went to UNICEF. I went to the UN. I went to a lot of places to really try to discover what was at the heart of the problem. And then I finally got to the point where I was originally curious, and then I became concerned, and those concerns led to outrage. And I just decided, instead of trying to find a way to rationalize it, I was going to try to do something about it. And right. The first thing was just to create awareness, because this is a silent social tragedy. Unless you've been involved with adoption internationally, you don't really know how burdensome this process is and how damaging it is to these children. So we said, well, we could fix this problem, or to begin to address this issue, when we could create some sort of improvement in the attitude and values, and let's get attitudes and values and get them to be examined in a completely new context. And the way you get a new context is create a collective awareness of a society. So That's why we're out with the film. It's we're in 80 days. We're in 62 cities, 18,000 miles, to make children living outside of parental care a real relevant social issue. And this is just a good old-fashioned barnstorming tour. We're building a movement. The tour culminates in Washington, D.C., on May 17th, we have the Step Forward for Orphans March. On that day, we will deliver our petition that we are collecting signatures on as we go to these 62 cities, and we will deliver that petition to President Obama and to every member of Congress, and basically say, enough is enough. These children should become a priority, and we are going to demand that we start putting some resources and mindshare towards this issue so that in the years ahead, more children will have a family. Right now, it's the system that's choking off the pathway to a family for kids. And that's just fundamentally, it's socially wrong. We just have to fix it.
Absolutely. Craig, you mentioned that the awareness part of this is most important. And so how can our listeners
get a hold of the documentary, see the documentary, be informed by the documentary? Where can they find it?
Go to stuckdocumentary.com. You can watch this film right now. It's 82 minutes. You will. It's a great learning platform. There's a lot of new information. Again, the reaction by the audiences has been, I had no idea.
Yes.
And so stuckdocumentary.com, you can get access to the film. You can get connected to the tour. You can follow us on our blog that we write daily when we're out on the road. And you can just learn more information about the movement we're trying to create, which basically is urging our leaders, global leaders, to make children living outside of parental care a relevant social issue and a real priority.
Craig, it's an honor to have you on the show. This is a topic that is near and dear to our hearts on the show, obviously something you're incredibly passionate about. Thanks so much for being on the show, and blessings to you as you bring this to our attention.
Thank you for helping me spread the word, and it's been a real pleasure, so I'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
Thanks. Blessings
to
you.
Thanks, Craig.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I mean, you know, as someone who, you probably know the statistics better than I do, I sense myself as someone who knows at least more than the average bear about international adoption, orphans, orphan care, that kind of stuff. When I saw the statistics about how drastically the number of international adoptions had dropped in the last 8 years, I was stunned. I had no idea.
Well, because it feels like the opposite. Like when he said that most people believe it's on the opposite, certainly multiracial, bicultural families feel like they're popping up everywhere. So whether they're just popping up on our radar, or whether, that's an interesting anomaly, how it feels like they're coming more, but it's becoming less. But, you know, being in the field, I know that's true. Lots of countries like Ethiopia and China and Guatemala, kind of the powerhouses, Romania, of adoption 5 and 10 years ago, have screeched to a stop. Haiti, and now are only letting very, very specific cases. And it's, you know, it's a conundrum, frankly, in the orphan world, because most folks think, well, maybe it's driving more national adoptions, which is not a bad thing. You know, as long as the kids are getting into a family, it doesn't matter if they're purple, green, or the same color, or whatever color. But if it's meaning that their kids are staying longer in institutions, well, then that's certainly something we need to all pay attention to.
You know, it was in the news recently, obviously, you may have seen it. It's been a month or so ago, obviously, when Putin decided to stop allowing Americans to adopt orphans in Russia. I mean, and so I hear what Craig is saying. It just sort of irritates me. It causes some outrage on the behalf that you're using children as a commodity. You're punishing another country or something. You're using kids as the middle of this, and it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, our listeners know that I live out of the country, and we have kids of different colors, and this is like my world, so it feels very normal to me. But if you go to Gracie's softball game today and you bring up this documentary with someone who's on the sidelines who maybe isn't in a bicultural setting and doesn't have children of a different color, and they say to you what we hear all the time, why don't they just adopt out of America? We all know that there are kids here, right here in America, that need adoption. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that?
I'd say go for it. That'd be the number one thing. Do you have any adopted children? Now, I'm calling the kettle black a little bit myself. I don't have any adopted children, but number one would be, that's great. Those kids need families just like international kids do. That would be number one. You're probably going to break me over the coals with my answers off the top of my head. The other is...
It's not a quiz.
Good, thanks. I'm good. So the other part of that would be the conditions that orphans live in other countries is astonishingly different than the condition that orphans in the United States live in. Those would be, off the top of my head, those would be my answers.
I think those are good answers.
How do I do?
I think those are good answers. I mean, I get some version of that question and all the time. You know, when I'm interviewed, people say, why don't you do what you do, but in the U.S. we have needs in the United States that need attention and all that. And I just think if it's being asked to me by a believer, my immediate response is, I'm just so sure you think Jesus is up in heaven looking at our national boundaries. I mean, he doesn't say, like, you only help your own kind. And plus, what the heck does my own kind even mean in the first place? Like, you know, I don't think in any way that God sees borders and calls us to stand within those borders. I think he calls us to love people, love children, serve him and his body and his creation. But when you're asked that by a non-Christian, it certainly is more complicated, because nationalism is a higher identity to them, whereas those of us who are citizens in a heavenly place have a higher nationality than the country of origin, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You can tell I'm about to get on the soapbox. Just wind me up, baby. I'm off. I am ready.
Well, two, really, I mean, if you can't start a conversation or have something interesting to read or watch or think about after today's show, I'm afraid you're probably not paying attention.
Well, I like that both of those guys had lots of information free online. So we certainly recommend that you go and purchase their materials. But it sounds like you can go to jenhatmaker.com and get blogs and ideas and experiments and conversation starters. And you can watch the entire Stuck film in its entirety on its website. So I like that today we can send people to continue to get more information to spur their conversations just for free online.
Absolutely. And if you want to connect to those, you can do that right through our website, which is reallifewithbethandrob.com. We'll be happy to post those up there. So you don't have to remember the myriad website names and those things. Just go right there, and we'll have links to those. And today is one of those shows where I think we're going to get a lot of people who are interested in figuring out how to get connected with Seven, from our first guest today about overcoming the mutiny against excess, and certainly our conversation about international adoption here that we just had.
I think so, too. I think even if we decided to not undertake 7 straight months of that kind of fasting, but 7 days or one of those issues for a week,
right,
we would find ourselves benefiting from that kind of choice.
Absolutely. Well, hey, one thing that we haven't talked about in a little bit of a while, and I know that you got some things coming up, is where in the world is Beth Kuchenberger and what's she going to be doing?
Oh, at the end of this month, one of the things I'm going to do is speak at my high school alma mater, which that is like, I mean, it's not even really normal.
You're getting like an award from them.
Oh, well, it's so amazing to think. I don't think I've been there in 20 years. And so I'm sure some of the teachers are the same. And
that's right.
I kind of graduated and didn't look back too much. So I'm excited about going back there to that. Yep. But all kinds of things. I'm going to be speaking at all kinds of events this month, and you can find out where all of those are at BethKuchenberger.com.
Yep. The other thing I want to make a quick plug for before we say goodbye for the week is there are some people who are continuing to sort of ask or wonder about, are there openings this summer at back-to-back sites wherever to go on a mission trip, short-term mission? And the answer is yes. If you go to backtoback.org, that's back, the number 2, back.org, you can see a calendar right on there and where there are open spots. So I want to make sure I made a plug for that. Not only can you just talk about and hear about getting involved in the life of orphans, you can actually do it. And back-to-back, I can't think of a better place to do it than through back-to-back, so I want to make sure I got that plug out as well.
I would love to see you all in Haiti and in Africa and India and any of the sites in Mexico. You and your best friend, you and your spouse, you and your family, come visit us this summer. We'd love to see you.
Yep. Well, Beth, another great Saturday. Good conversation. Felt like we were just hanging out, talking to some good folks.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. So we will do it again next week. We're going to do it again next Saturday. We hope you will join us there. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll see you next Saturday. But until then, have a great week. See you.